Welcome back to the Pop Punk Emo Supremo podcast featuring two lovely gentlemen. We got Roper.
Yo, what's up?
We got me, Hunter.
Yo, what's up?
Guys, it's the first episode of the new year. Not right now, it's actually the 31st when we're recording.
Yeah, but on Wednesday it'll be 2022 when this episode drops.
Which is crazy. So we thought, hey, new year, new artists.
Yeah.
So we have a awesome interview today with Nate from Raccoon Tour. Super fun. We were a little nervous at first. We didn't know what to expect. He actually reached out to us and we loved his music that much. So we were like, we got to have him on the show.
Yes.
And it was a blast talking with him. And I actually knew him from his YouTube channel, Nate is Lame.
So is that what his channel name was?
Mm-hmm.
I should have asked him after the interview because I was going to go watch some of his videos. But now I know what it's called.
And it's really good. Like, he does really good. I think it's more geared towards younger audiences.
Probably.
Probably 16 to, or maybe even younger. But there's some, like, really good videos. He has this Halloween video we kind of talk about briefly. Actually, I think we talked about it before the interview, so.
Maybe.
And I loved it, and he just does a great job with literally everything he does. So, really excited about that. But we got a few things to get done before we jump into this interview, Roper. You need to calm yourself down. You
better wipe your hands because dirty work's, or whatever. Dirty work's about to start.
Jesus. Okay, let's move this along. Usually we'd go to listener responses, but apparently you guys don't love us that much.
Yeah.
Where's our responses, guys?
Yeah, come on.
We need to know what your brain is thinking.
It was a great question, too. We were like, what do you want us to talk about in 2022?
Yeah, I feel like it's a little open-ended, like,
do you want me to, like, kind of put it out again and then be like,
just put it out every day till someone responds.
Tell us what you want to hear from us in 2022.
Or we're not coming back. Nope. We'll come back. We got nothing better to do. So,
kinda
eerie. We literally do these discussions. So if you're listening to this and you're not a part of them, you definitely should. We really want to build this community. And
yeah,
it would be helpful if you guys were a part of it.
Yeah.
So we're going to skip over that and we're actually going to go into our new releases of the week. Are you ready?
Hell yeah.
Roper, this week we have very little. It's been a dry spell for songs.
Yeah, I think it's just because it's the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully our Reddit guy's okay.
Yeah, I know. He hasn't posted anything. Maybe he hasn't seen much either.
Maybe he hasn't been paying attention.
Yeah. But we did find two songs for you guys, both actually found by Roper, but I'm going to talk about the first one because I love it. That's by a band called Title Holder with his song Hanging by a Thread. This could fall apart at any moment. Everything's just hanging by a thread. When I first heard this, I was like, oh, there's horns. And then Roper told me, and this is, we don't know for sure, but it sounds like the Keep Flying guys did this.
Yeah, they're in the music video at least.
Oh, okay. So.
Yeah, so I think it's bass player from the band Card Reader, and then maybe another member from Card Reader, but the other guys, at least in the video, were all Keep Flying.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I think I really like this song. It doesn't have a lot of production behind it. Like, the horns sound
This is a fairly new project.
Yeah, so he's probably still building this up. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
It doesn't need the production that a lot of other songs do to actually stand out. This guy does it by himself.
Yeah, for being a first
great vocalist too.
First year project. I don't know if it's first year, but fairly new. Like,
yeah, it's doing great.
Doing really well. And it's nice to hear a ska song every once in a while, you know?
Every day for me. I need some horns.
I told you, 2021 was the year of ska for me. Mm-hmm. My mind exploded.
And I'm glad that we could do that for you here, Roper.
It's about damn time.
Roper, you got one for us.
Yeah. So there is a band called Marionette, and they put out an acoustic track called Luminescent Nights.
Captivating hearts, illuminescent nights illuminate the sky. actually really like this. It sounds very twangy, a little bit Swan core.
Yeah, they are. I think they're on Will Swan's record label.
Okay.
So it falls into that category, but most time, or this band mainly puts out Swan core style songs. So it's a lot of fast pace with leadly riffs. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But their lead singer, he's got a little soul behind him too. I don't know what it is lately. I've just been falling into like more so like soulful singers.
Yeah. No, he has a fantastic voice.
They are actually the band that I showed you.
I remember.
In August. Yep. They put out the Michael Jackson cover.
Yep.
It might be hands down one of my favorite covers now. I wish we waited a year to put out our covers episode.
You know what? We'll probably do another.
We will do a round two.
Eventually. That one will be. We're going to run out of ideas soon.
Yep.
So if Title Holder has the more raw sound, then Armanet?
A Marionette.
I can never do it.
Words are hard.
They have the more produced clean sound. Yeah. So
I mean, they've been.
It's a nice little combo for this.
They've been at it for about 10 years. So.
Oh, okay. They got the experience then. Well, cool. We don't really have any other notable releases because. Well, it's been a dry spell. So I'm betting like the first 3 months of the year are going to kind of be like that too. And then it's all going to explode.
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping next month or even next week, maybe we might get some solid releases. So.
I know a lot of releases come towards the summer and come early towards the end of the year. Because
early spring.
You think spring?
That's when the singles start and then they start to drop summer albums.
Yeah, summer albums. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So... Well, we will be there to cover that when it happens.
Plus, there's a lot of bands going on tour this year, hopefully, with this whole new fucking COVID strain, that they actually continue to go out on tour. And with that, a lot of people are writing new music and putting new music out, so that way they can play it on the new tours. So
yeah, we got a lot going on. It's going to be exciting. But we have an interview, Roper.
We do.
Here we go. We got Nate. We built our home with 2x4s. The nights are cold, your arms are sore. The ground eats us whole. Raccoon Tour is an indie emo, folk, punk, and so many more genres band from Boise, Idaho, combining the beautiful sounds of banjo, guitar, ukulele, and many other instruments. Raccoon Tour has impressed many new listeners. Even my girlfriend says it's cool. Please welcome the lead singer and writer, Nate.
Hello. I think you forgot one of the genres. I think you forgot to mention garbage.
Garbage. Wow. So they came out strong. You showed them so fast. Holy cow. Well, Nate, so this is going to be an interesting interview. I can already tell.
Oh boy. My apologies in advance.
I also just want to like throw out there real quick that Nate has a YouTube channel called Nate is Lame that I've been watching forever and it's fantastic. So go ahead and check that out as well after you listen to his new record.
Or don't if you happen to like, the self-deprecating thing's getting old.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's a charm. We got a few friends like that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for watching and thank you for listening.
Absolutely.
For sure.
We got a few standard questions to kind of, start us all out with before we get into individual songs. I'm going to go ahead and start us off with, what was your introduction into the scene?
I used to be friends with I'm still friends with the fellow who played in a punk band locally, and he invited me to one of his shows, and I went out and I was like, oh my God, people just play in bands. People make music just for fun. they get together with their friends. Oh my God. Then I wound up playing with that band and I got to play a lot of shows and learn an instrument and learn the ins and outs of the music industry. Music industry as you can get practicing in someone's living room in Boise, Idaho. and so that kind of just really introduced me to my community out here in Idaho. And I really learned to admire DIY music. A lot of pop punk, emo, stuff like that. It all started when I was 16 years old in that little band. So I was kind of grassroots. And I'm proud of that.
Absolutely. Ooh, yeah. How much did you know the instrument you were playing in the band? Did you know it decently well when you started?
I had never picked up a bass guitar, and I was playing on stage with them in 7 days.
Oh my God.
It wasn't Roper, a good performance, but it was a performance.
Just playing the root notes?
Oh, I still just play root notes.
whatever makes the sound.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess my rule of thumb whenever I'm working with a bass is if I can like point it out, it's bad, fix it. I don't want to notice the bass.
Yeah.
You know, we're not Red Hot Chili Peppers. Chill out.
What inspired you to... let me start that again. What inspired you to write a concept record?
The thing is, when you work on an album for 7-8 years, eventually your head disappears up your own butt, whether you want it to or not. And eventually, if you let an album sit for any album you're working on, if you let it sit long enough, it will turn into a concept record, whether you want it to or not. So I think it's just, it took so long and I was like, what if there was like a story? What if there were like things happening? What if there were like intersecting, this and that, and there's a town and they have like this and that, and they have these characters and these characters want, it just devolves into whatever you want, after long enough. I think if you let an album sit for more than 3 years, it turns into a concept record.
Did you want to be a concept record?
Originally, I just want to make something cool. My rule of thumb is if my 14-year-old self wouldn't think it's awesome, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Honestly, yeah, kind of an interesting...
That's pretty cool.
Interesting tone there.
Yeah.
How do you think your music career started? Do you think it started with the punk band, or do you feel like it started elsewhere?
Well, I was always kind of pushing for these ideas in the punk band, but they'd existed long, long, long before I did. They've been together for years. And so whenever I'd be like, guys, why don't we have bridges? And they'd be like, nah, man, that's not how we work.
Can't have bridges.
No.
You know? And so I would kind of take their songs and I'd fiddle around with them on my own. I'm like, this is so much cooler. You know, I just go back and forth and I just kind of learned to songwrite by piggybacking off of them and kind of picking apart songs that I really liked. For example, our song So Farm Running came about when I was trying to cover Sleeping Lessons by The Shins. And if you listen to the two side by side, there's a lot of similarities in terms of the structure, the tone. But if you tweak it well enough, then it kind of becomes its own thing, you know? And so I just did that for years and years and years. And I just started compiling these songs. And before you knew it, I had like 8 or 9 songs in my senior year of high school. And so I had a senior project. I had a friend of mine help me record one of those songs finally. And the nice thing about YouTube, or, you know, being pre-existing on YouTube, is that I was able to upload it. And I had an audience of over 100,000 people who were there to listen to it immediately, who also happened to like the music I was making. So it was kind of just a really happy accident. So Farm Running kind of took off. I Surrender Records heard it, and they liked it too. And the rest is history, I guess. It was just a big accident falling upwards forever over the course of like 7 years.
Yeah, usually I find it's the other way around. You constantly fall down.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you had some luck and success.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah. My stepmom likes to say I have a lucky star.
Aw.
I'm like, nice. I hope I can pay rent with it someday.
One day you will.
One day. I'm sure you probably got like $2 in streaming right now. So you're kind of living it up.
Well, I still have to pay back the budget for recording. So
no.
I was kind of living it up a little bit last year. So I'll take a little bit.
Who are some of your musical influences?
Boy, we got 7 years to go through. Well, let's see here. Just like as an elevator pitch, I like to tell people that Raccoon Tour is like Cave Town meets The Used.
Okay.
You know, put those together. But we have little dashes of, you know, I hear people compare us to 21 Pilots a lot. And I get that with the ukulele and stuff. But I feel like Raccoon Tour has a lot more in common with Panic at the Disco.
Yeah.
In terms of how they write and structure songs, how they like to set things up and pay them off. They're very theatrical. And have like this Broadway vibe to them, especially in the later albums, which aren't as good, in my opinion. But even the early stuff. And I feel I draw a lot more from Panic at the Disco than I do 21 Pilots, but I also really like how 21 Pilots use a lot of catharsis, and they also just ramp things up and ramp them up and ramp them up. And then you have a bridge and they take this to this extreme, and then you're just begging for this crazy anthemic ending. And they give it to you. So I really try to mimic that in a lot of my songwriting as well. And I really like Cave Town Sentiment. I like a lot of his soundscapes and structures. But also I am inspired by a lot of really small artists that like 12 people listen to on Bandcamp, because I probably know them personally. Hecra is my favorite musical artist of all time. And so he not only influenced the album a lot, but he also got to sing in our song Horror Show. I really liked Hecra in particular because I liked the aesthetics that he uses. He grew up in Chicago in like the early 2000s, 90s. And he has this very specific aesthetic of like wood paneling and a suburban home in the middle of a street, and it's foggy outside, you know, ride your bike down to the VHS rental store, break a window, that kind of thing. Stuff that, it was like a culture I was very on the fringe of, because I was born in 99. So I got little bits and pieces of the 90s, little bits and pieces of the 2000s, but I wasn't immersed in it because I was like 7, 8 years old, you know?
Yeah.
So I draw a lot from 90s, 2000s aesthetics, from Hecra as well. I absolutely adore Hecra.
Absolutely. You know, I saw it because when I was listening to it, I was like, I don't know if I just compare every band that I consider folk punk to be closer to like, who am I thinking of? The Front Bottoms. And then I saw that you were produced by the same guy that produces the Front Bottoms. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I was like, it all kind of makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you guys definitely have your originality to them. But I mean, I definitely could see like when their producer like jumps in, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, definitely some Front Bottoms vibe there. So I felt validated and I was happy about that.
Yeah, it was really cool because when I was in the studio, like I'd be sitting on the toilet and I'd be like, Brian Stella probably sat on this toilet too. That's really cool.
That is,
you know,
fucking cool.
You hear a lot of, this is just a really quick little rabbit trail. You hear a lot of, you know, gossip about other bigger artists when you're working with folks who are established. And turns out all the people who you think are cool are really cool. And all the people who you think suck really suck. And the people who you think are weird probably record naked. Surprise. So it was really cool. And it was a good catch of yours, Brett Romnes and the Front Bottoms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really happy to see that because I'm a big Front Bottoms fan.
I love the Front Bottoms.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so give us this. What's the origin of your band name? Even if it's a cheesy question, I want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love telling the story. When I was a kid, a raccoon went through my neighborhood and it just gutted everybody's pet cats. If you had a cat outside, it wasn't in your bedroom with you, your cat was dead when you woke up.
Oh, shit. Jesus.
So everybody, you know, they wake up like, hey, where's Mr. Whiskers? And they open up the sliding door, probably in a bathrobe, coffee in hand. And dad walks out in his slippers, goes, ah, shit.
Honey, grab the shovel. Got work to do.
So everybody was really bummed out at the bus stop that morning when I was in middle school. Everyone's like, my cat died today. Well, my cat died today. And everybody just bonded instantaneously over the vicious, horrible murder of their cats that night. So that's why our logo is a dead cat and raccoon tour. Those are two really cool words, I think, put them together. But also, you know, he went around my neighborhood, he toured it, and he killed everybody. It's not that deep, to be honest. I just thought it was kind of interesting.
But it's an interesting
story. Still pretty unique.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So now that we've kind of gotten through some standard questions, we're going to talk about a little bit about the album, The Denton Weaver. Can you kind of go through like what's happening in the story of The Denton Weaver?
Well, basically, to describe it broadly, Denton Weaver is kind of a fictionalized version of a lot of stuff I did when I was a kid. When it comes down to going on adventures, engaging in petty crime, doing things that my parents still don't know I did. And, you know, having crushes on, you know, people who probably weren't very good for me at that age. Trying to talk friends down from suicide when you're 14 years old can get a little bit heavy.
Yeah,
just a lot of stuff. It's kind of like just a journal for me. If I'm not describing something I was doing, I was probably describing something I was feeling when I was a teenager. Whether that be existential terror or angst and angry and, oh, you kissed Brad. Well, fuck you. You know, stuff like that. So essentially I took a lot of those stories and I went the extra step and I personified all myself and a lot of my friends down to just two characters with a lot of essences of us. I have an 80-page lore Bible that I refer to whenever I'm making notes for artwork for our artist Sarah Reniers. Whenever I'm pitching concepts and ideas and music videos to people, I always have this giant list of details of the world, the people. It's something that we're going to explore later on with different mediums like video, physical booklets, illustrations, hopefully animation, you know, depending on how the album is.
Absolutely.
I do have a studio I'm looking at. It's just, you know, it's animating things. It's expensive. You don't want to look like garbage.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess the story itself, I could ramble about it for like 20, 30 minutes. But that's basically the gist. Just a manic pixie dream girl mixed with my own garbage growing up. And it ends with a funeral.
Oh, wow. What a happy ending.
Well, you got to grow up someday.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. So can you describe the development of this album and how long the process took for you?
7-8 years.
Well, yeah, because we kind of knew that this was, I mean, this was a long process for you. Did you plan it to come out a long time originally and you just kind of kept with it until you felt satisfied?
Well, I had a collection of songs and they were about similar things and they were written along a long period of my life. When I was doing different things, felt different things, believed in different things. So that's why I think a lot of the songs sound so different from each other, but also, you know, the concept itself wasn't fully formed. That kind of developed afterwards. Basically, I had no intentions of really professionally making an album. Maybe I'd throw something on Bandcamp when I was, you know, 18, 19 years old. And that was originally the plan. I announced the album to release in 2018. But then, you know, we got scooped up by a record label and they're like, listen, we understand that you want to release songs and you have these songs written and recorded, but right now they don't sound as good as they could sound. So we recorded the album about 3 times or so.
Oh my God.
Did they front the bill?
Yes, they did. That's
okay. Oh, that's good.
Absolutely. It wouldn't sound like it does without I Surrender Records. They've been absolutely spectacular. You know, you record through it on an iPad and you're like, this sounds so good. And then you go to a DIY studio and this, you're like, this sounds incredible. And then you fly across the country to record with Brett Romnes. And by the time you're done and you're listening back to the masters, you're peeing your pants. So yeah, we have like 3 or 4 versions of every single song. I'd like to share them someday. That will be something I'd really like to do, is to show the progress. You know, just for songwriters, folks who want to get into music, like I would have appreciated if I was younger. But yeah, it's just been a total roller coaster. COVID certainly didn't help.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this album would be a year or two old without COVID. So yeah, it's just been ages and ages, but it finally came together after almost a decade. Cool.
Well, I'll say, so here's a good segue into our next question, but with going in and releasing older versions of these songs, you could like hit up the artist, and I know that they add a lot of detail throughout, so like with each iteration of the releases, you could like make it less detailed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. That'd be cool. I'm just saying.
That'd be kind of neat.
That's a freebie for you.
Absolutely. I might take you up on that.
You know? So I know you mentioned the artist's name, but could you say her name again?
Sarah Reniers.
Sarah Reniers. Okay. Well, first and foremost, the artwork's fantastic.
Absolutely.
I know. It's like, she's so good.
It's so good. Was she influenced by anything like Adventure Time or?
I don't know. I can't speak for her. I'm afraid.
Gotta call her up right now.
Yeah.
Crap. We just communicate through Twitter DMs.
Maybe we'll have an answer by the end.
Yeah, you're good. She's pretty incredible. She was the artist who I wanted to work with from the very get-go. She was my first pick. She used to be on Instagram, and I'd see her webcomics, and they were incredible. And some friends of mine in a band called Mains and Monitors, who were great, rest in peace, they broke up. Turns out they commissioned her to make like a band photo for them. So instead of, you know, a bunch of guys with their arms crossed in an alleyway and it's black and white and they're looking down at the camera, you have them in a flooded house, like hanging onto barrels and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's the coolest idea ever, you know, and just a big stream of band photos and stuff like that. You have a cartoon and it's awesome. And I'm like, why don't bands do this kind of thing? So I saw what she was doing. I saw her style. And so whenever I would imagine artwork, I kind of just ran it through a Sarah filter.
Yeah.
Where I was like, how would she do this? And how can I kind of guide her to create this image in my head that I already know she can make? And so essentially all the artwork that you see her put out is exactly how I imagined it, because she is just so consistent. She's so fantastic. She has a very specific style, and it's kind of how I imagined the album to feel in the first place. It's just kind of like this wonderful feedback loop, and I'm so lucky to be able to work with her.
Yeah, no, she 100% killed it. I think that was when we were first hit up by your publicist. I think that was the first thing, because that's what the first thing you look at before you listen to the music, right? You see the album cover.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, this screams quality. And then, so as soon as I started listening, I was like, all right, the music backs it up. So it was a pleasant surprise. Yeah. We have a lot of people request to come on the show for interviews, and we usually turn them down. I think you were the first person that we were like, you came, or your publicist came to us, and we were like, okay, we got to have them on.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I think I wish more DIY bands took more pride in their image, because that's the thing that people see more often than they hear.
Yeah.
You know, more people will see your artwork, will see your photos, will see your assets before they listen to your music. And if your assets suck, they're not going to listen to you. So it just bums me out. And there's also a ton of starving artists out there who would love to draw pictures for really cool punk bands. So anybody listening, hit up an artist, you know, ask them what they'll charge you. It's normally like $50 to $150 for something amazing that's going to last forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, amazing investment. Absolutely.
I think, well, I don't understand, because I don't know if you're like a Day to Remember fan or anything, but like I always thought their artwork was so fucking good, and it's always drawn. And I'm like, why don't more bands do that? Like, they've always kind of consistently, regardless of like whether their new records are any good or not, that's up for debate.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, the artwork has always drawn me into them. So I feel like, they need to do more artwork for.
And the sky's the limit when you're drawing something, by the way. You're not, you know, restricted. So it can be whatever you want, you know. So that's just a weird random gripe of mine that I have. So it's cool that you guys feel the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. What if you're just like, no, that's a horrible idea. I want men crossing their arms in the alley.
I want minimalist album covers only.
And anything more, I'm not even going to look at.
So did you give her like a general idea of the artwork, like what you had in your head, or did she kind of take some small ideas from you and then run with it after?
The way that we've worked together has kind of changed a little bit, but basically what I would do is I would get a hold of Sarah and I would draw my own version of the album, because I kind of have a background in design. I'm not very good, but I can get ideas across. And so essentially I would draw something up. I would have the color palette I have in mind. I would send her that picture and I would give her just this huge checklist of things that I'm imagining, where they go, what happens. And she sends back a goddamn masterpiece every single time. Although eventually I was like, do you need me to draw these pictures? Because I'm spending so much time on these. He's like, you can just send me a description. I'll do it. And I'm like, oh, cool. So essentially that's how we work now. I just send her a poem or, you know, a big block of text, and she sends me back a picture. And
it's so cool.
Incredible. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love it better though if you were like a cool album cover and then it just popped up exactly the way you wanted.
And it also, you know, one last thing on this, I guess, is it's a really cool and exciting experience to imagine a picture, send it to somebody, and then have them send back something physical for you to see. And it's customized. It's yeah, for you. That is so exciting. It's like Christmas whenever I get a new picture from Sarah. It is so cool. I feel bad for people don't commission artists because it is a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, support small artists.
We'll have to put her Instagram or whatever in the show notes.
Yeah.
So people can check her out. She's phenomenal. Yeah. 100% beautiful.
Absolutely. I can hook you up.
Do you want to jump into the songs, Nate?
Yeah, let's do it.
First track we have ready to go is Converse County. Maybe. So tell me what Converse County is about. What's the story behind this song?
So Converse County is a real place that you can go to. I don't know why you'd want to go there, but you can. It's a small community in Wyoming. And in it is a town called Douglas. And my dad grew up in Douglas. And so every summer we would take a vacation to Douglas, Wyoming. And it's the kind of town where it's falling apart. The shop signs are all hand painted. There's like chains on the outside of the street, you know, on the outside of the city limits, and everything else is just like ma and pa shops. The library is super nice and everything else is like out of a Western movie. It's this weird, strange, falling apart teenage wasteland, the kind of place that like aliens would invade in a Steven Spielberg movie. And what made this place stick out to me so much was we would always stay in a cabin on the outskirts of the city, like 20 miles away from any other human beings. And out there, when you look up in the sky, you know, it is vast and it is gorgeous to look up into outer space and the cosmos. And you see the Milky Way, like in those Google satellite pictures and stuff like that. It looks like that. There's colors. It's huge and you feel so tiny and insignificant. Normally I think that's absolutely gorgeous, but there was one year I went when I was going through this really bad existential crisis. I looked up and that just shattered me. That freaked me out.
He's smiling and, while he says this. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was like 7 years ago. I'm better. We're over it. So Converse County is kind of just about that feeling of being tiny, insignificant. You're going to die someday. There's nothing afterwards, more than likely. That kind of sucks. That's pretty scary when you're 15 years old, coming to terms with that for the first time. And, you know, some other stuff about, I don't know, lights, people being home, fucking up. I don't know. They just sounded cool. Yeah, it's just kind of it's more of like an abstract painting, just a lot of things and feelings that don't really mean a whole lot. It's just about how it makes you feel and what you get out of it, you know? So that's Converse County. It's also the setting of the fictional story as well.
Nice. That's cool that your dad's from Douglas. I was actually born in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Wonderful. Have you ever been up to Esterbrook, Wyoming?
I have not. I might have when I was younger, but we moved to Iowa when I was like two or three, but we'd go back and visit every once in a while. So, but I mean, you get out in those mountains and you feel like the smallest person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Esterbrook is famous for having this church. It's like a little baby steeple. Like if you asked like a 3-year-old to draw a church, They would draw the Esterbrook Church. But what makes it so famous is it's, first off, it's tiny, but it's overlooking this huge field and mountain. What's that big mountain? It's the big famous mountain from Wyoming. And
we know cornfields here.
Yeah. It's stunning. There's grass, there's trees, it's wide open, and there's like this giant window that looks out on it, and it is absolutely incredible. I'd love to get married in there someday.
Oh, that'd be beautiful.
It is like the most beautiful place in the whole wide world, and we actually use that design and echo it in a lot of the album artwork.
Okay.
You see the Esterbrook Church in the background of the Converse County album or song cover.
Nice.
And if you buy the vinyl record and there's like a little artwork pullout, we also have a drawing of just the Esterbrook church run through the Denton Weaver filter, of course. But I don't know why that church just stuck with me. So it's a very prominent fixture in a lot of the album's lore. So that's just like a random little detour.
That's pretty cool.
Well, I know you said you wanted to get married there, and I just want you to know that Roper is single. So if you're interested, you know, both have beards. I think it would work.
I mean, we're both familiar with Wyoming and all that jazz. We got so much in common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, just an idea.
All right. So instrumentally, this gives off some My Chemical Romance vibes. Mm-hmm. How big, if there was any influence, were they on this song?
I was literally telling my guitar tech, I was like, I played a Frank Iero song, and I was like, I want that guitar tone on this song. So you're kind of spot on there.
Yeah.
I think tonally, it's very similar with My Chemical Romance, but structurally, emotionally, I think it's just a little bit too slow to draw any further comparisons. I don't know who else I would describe having this kind of feel in common. And I swear to God, I stole the lead melody from somewhere. I have no clue. I have no clue where. Like, I've hummed it and I've asked Twitter, I'm like, where's this from? I think it's from like a Garfield and Friends episode or something like that. They're lost at sea and there's like a pirate shanty playing and it's that. I don't know. If somebody knows, let me know and I can let the appropriate party sue me. It's I don't know. That melody's too good to come from.
I don't know if it's Garfield and Friends, you got a good chance of winning since that's not a show anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. They might be desperate for a couple of
bucks. Might be coming back.
Yeah. Well, you know, they must have great lawyers.
Nickelodeon bought the rights to Garfield. So.
Oh, yeah. Isn't
he's going to be in the new Smash game. You can see
he
that?
Is in the new Smash game. You can place him right now.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And then Chris Pratt's going to voice him in the new Garfield movie.
There's Mario's going to play Garfield.
Another one, yeah.
We need to stop. Chris Pratt's in too many things. I'm done with him. I love him, but I'm done with him. So when writing this, did you start with just the ukulele or did you also have like the organ guitar leads in mind?
I started off with that melody in mind. And also separately, I had this little bit where I go, maybe I fucked up, maybe that's, you know, I just had this little bit in my head. And one day I was playing through the song, you know, I just put root chords to it, and I'd hum it to myself. And I realized these are in the same key and I kind of jammed them together. And I realized this could be like one half of the song. This could be the other half. We could end it on this big anthemic bit. And they're two very distinctly different emotional feels. So they kind of, you know, could, if you put them together, you'd probably have a pretty cool song. And it wound up being one of my favorite tracks on the album. So it was just a complete accident, McFrankenstein, but it turned out really cool in my opinion.
No, like just as writing songs, like I've had tons of times where I had two separate songs and I'm like, actually, these would work really together. Kind of make it mesh well. And then, I feel like they came out pretty well. But absolutely, I think that's I've also learned that when I'm writing music, the lyrics almost always come first. And then I find out what key I'm singing in and then I like find the chords to go around it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're like that at all.
Yeah, normally I get like a vocal riff, you know, just a bunch of lyrics and they go in this melody and they sound like this, but that's all I have and I have to work around it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you have any fun facts about this song in particular?
This was the last song that we recorded vocals for. It was the song that we wrapped the entire album on. And the last vocal take we did was the start of the second verse when I'm screaming, "The lights are on, but she's never home." I'd been singing that entire day. We did all vocals in one day, one session. Geez. And it was brutal. And so I wanted to end the album with all the screaming parts so I don't blow my voice out. And we just recorded with like three microphones. We threw a microphone in the middle of a room and I was just hanging on a door frame and I was just swinging back and forth like Tarzan. I was shrieking and we wound up using that take. So that's what you hear in the album.
Nice.
Huh. Interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I wouldn't have expected that.
No.
It was wild.
So lyrically, what are some standout lyrics to you on this song?
I really like the simplicity of the outro. I just think there's something very primally intimate and earnest and immediately relatable about just, you know, having some self-doubt and insecurity. Maybe you fucked up. Maybe I fucked up. Maybe everything's fucked up. Who gives a shit, you know? Well, I give a shit.
I really like the delivery on the last line.
Yeah.
It just always really stood out to me as something that was like special, a part of this record.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
sometimes you can do something really elaborate like the front bombs where you're tying together weird metaphors and imagery, or you could just say how you're feeling. And I think that that's one of the most raw spots on the entire album.
Absolutely. I mean, the front bombs, I don't think they know what they're writing half the time.
No.
But I still like it.
And a nice little tidbit, by the way, Brett was kind enough to share with me a little story, is whenever he was recording vocals from the front bottom, sometimes Brian Sella was just making them up as he sang. A lot of it was just improvised.
I knew it.
Got him. We got him, boys.
We got him, boys.
Yeah, because some of the shit that he says, dude, I am like, where is this coming from?
Yeah. No.
Right out like of that. His butt. And yep. It's awesome.
Have you guys seen like that meme that's like, you guys would cry at the front bottoms wrote songs about like roast beef sandwich or whatever, and you're a vegetarian
next album.
And I mean, like, but like it was just so perfect because that's definitely something he would write.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like without a doubt in my mind. let's jump into track two here, or the second track we picked, Mount Hecla. Did I pronounce that right?
Mount Hecla. Yes.
You're making poverty so fun. I wouldn't starve with anyone but you, you perfect actor. Burn with me forever after. Eat the rich and lose our jobs. Move down south to the Arctic thaws. I pray that in the end it hurts, cause that means that we tried to make this work.
This song is why you don't write about people you're in love with.
Oh,
all right.
Well, sweet. What's the story?
Yeah, what's
tell us all about
it. Get into it.
So Mount Hecla is a super volcano in Iceland. And if it erupts, we're fucked. Just like it's like a Yellowstone, but people don't talk about it. It's a lot more active. I don't know if that's true, actually. I was going to say it's a lot more active than Yellowstone, but I actually realized I don't know if that's true. Caught myself before I was given fake news.
Thank God.
Yeah, or else,
you
know.
Fact check.
Yeah, Facebook fact checked on it.
I can't afford another one. And basically, at the time, I was dating somebody who went on a round world trip with her grandmother. And she got to go to all these incredible countries, but she was gone for a month. And we were both 18 years old, fresh out of high school. We were both listful and horny and a little sad, and we're like, I miss you, I don't like being away from you for this long, oh, we're gonna burn down capitalism and blah 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 blah, you know.
What the fuck?
Just you're fresh out of, you know, you're fresh out of high school, what can you do?
Yeah.
And she was really impressed with Mount Hecla, and so much that she named a bearded dragon that we cared for named Hecla. And so that song was originally kind of a love song for her, just describing the dynamics of our relationship, the ideals that we shared together, as well as this unique imagery of, you know, her being far away in Iceland and her missing me and I miss her. But upon, you know, breaking up and listening back to the song and that kind of thing, I'm like, what a bummer that the most romantic song I could write for this person is just so riddled with dysfunction and, you know, I guess just dysfunction. It's a very unsatisfied love song, in my opinion, when I listen back to it. It just wasn't a great relationship for either of us, I guess. But it has a really cool synth riff, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess that's what the song is about. To me, it's just about this old relationship I had. It's kind of interesting to listen back to it now that I'm out of that relationship. You know, stuff changes, and it's just interesting to see how context can also adjust to the same thing as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and cool synth leads.
Cool synth leads. Speaking of
the thing right there.
Speaking of those cool synth leads, it's got this whole song has a very reminiscent sound to like mid 2000s pop punk, like 2008 to 2010. Yeah. Yeah. Is that, I was going to say, what made you decide that electric feel to it?
This is going to sound completely unrelated, but I promise you.
Hey, we'll get there.
In 2010 or 11, Steve Jobs was introducing the iPad 2. And he was showing off, oh, look at how cool it can do GarageBand. Listen to what you can make with GarageBand. And so he pulls out a song called Curtain Call.
Oh, I know this story.
And it goes do 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 do, and it just like wanders off. And I'm like, you had a really cool progression right there.
Yeah.
You had like this really do 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 do, like what, you just throw that away? They play it like once and they're done with it. I was 11 years old. Like I knew nothing about music, but I heard that and I'm like, that's a good riff. And you're going to just waste it? It frustrated me back when I knew nothing about music.
Yeah.
And for over a decade, I've just been humming that do, 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 do. And eventually I was just like, fuck it. I'm going to steal it. I'm going to steal this from Steve Jobs. Thanks, buddy. So basically, I wanted to retain that riff. We tried it on guitar. We tried it on banjo. We tried it on piano. We tried it on a lot of different instruments, but the synthesizer just sounded best.
Yeah.
Especially when you're singing about snowy landscapes and that kind of thing. Electric stuff tends to feel a little bit colder most of the time. So that was kind of why. It just sounded best to us in studio.
That's really interesting.
I like the experimentation behind it.
Yeah.
Because like you can, almost any instrument is going to be able to play a riff.
Yeah.
If you do it right. So, I mean, there's so many options, and then you have tones that add to it, and then like all these weird things that you can add to it. That's what makes music special though, right? That's what makes certain things stand out. If every guitar sounded the same, every song would be boring at this point.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that doesn't stop most pop punk bands though.
Well,
but hey. Tis.
Should I end the Zoom call?
No.
I'm just making sure. What are some lyrics on this song that stands out to you?
The ones that stand up to me, stand out to me. I'm not offended by my songs. I'll take them down. They don't stand out to me.
Take those on.
Yeah. I always come back to bridges. I'm really happy with how the bridges turned out on this album. My head's in the clouds. I liked it better when I was there on the ground. Our head's in the clouds. Someday we'll find a place that we can call ours. Essentially, it's just me admitting to myself that I have no clue what the hell I'm talking about with this economic political stuff in the context of me being 18, trying to afford my very first apartment with this person who I also like very much. And maybe I'm just lazy. Who knows? Maybe, you know, socialism, capital. I don't freaking know. I'm just 18 years old and I want to make out and eat cereal all day. You know, it was just kind of a little confessional, and especially post breakup, I'm like, you know, it kind of unearths a lot of the insecurities that I was feeling in that specific relationship as well. Man, this is becoming like a therapy session almost.
We're doing it.
We tricked you.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Your mom actually hired us. So.
Yeah.
You guys, how much am I being charged for this? Because I can barely afford rent right now.
Your mom covered it, dude.
She did.
You're set. You got an hour with us.
First session is for free.
Well, what's the next one? Thanks, Mom. Yeah.
See if we make it there.
All right, I got a good question here. Do you think the old significant other has heard this song? And if so, what do you think would think of it? Oh, she has heard it. Okay.
She has heard it. Like I said, I've recorded this song like 4 times. She heard a lot of the old songs when they were coming out, especially Mount Hecla. I loved playing that for her. And she loved it. I'm sure she doesn't love it anymore, but you know, at the time it was, at the time it was a very genuine, expression of how I felt for her at the time. And there was a lot of honesty in there and she loved it. It was right up her alley. The kind of stuff that she would listen to her by herself. And she really liked it. I don't want to ask her what she thinks of it now, but you know, The feedback that I've heard has been positive, and I'm honest with that.
There you go.
That's good.
So with Mount Hecla, do you think that when you were writing this song, like that you would have the feelings you do now attached to it, or did you ever have that inkling and now going back to it, it's weird? Or because I've had moments like that in my life.
So like, do I feel the same way listening back to the song?
Yeah, or, it's like when you wrote it. Do you feel like, do you still have that happy feeling, or is it kind of is it tarnished?
I mean, I think this one especially is really interesting because I do remember and I vividly feel all the exact same things that are described in the song, the events, the emotions. I can remember those very vividly. It's just, you know, years put a lot of that into context where in the song I was kind of just blaming, society. Oh, gosh darn it. This is why I can't do anything right. And this is why it's us versus the world. But in retrospect, it kind of just comes down to me realizing I had a lot of personal shortcomings and so did she. And we just, you know, weren't cut out for each other in the long run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting because I don't think I would rewrite it any other way. It's just, there's a different context in my head now that completely changes the color of it. Yeah. You know? Okay. So I think it still holds up. I still will totally play it live. Say it with every bit of passion. It's just, you know, the story's changed a little bit, but it doesn't retcon anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we covered this one pretty well.
Yeah, we did.
Let's go to the next song here. It's a little dirty. It's Fuck. What's the story behind Fuck?
Can you guess? Basically, Fuck for me is, I got to be really careful talking about this one. Fuck started off as this really angry, bitter, fuck you, I hate you. My therapist told me to write a song about how I was feeling upon the fallout of a very serious relationship I was in. And so I just wrote this angry, vile, villainous, shitty, just blatantly offensive. Like, they're breakup songs. This was just offensive. And I wrote it and I was like, yeah, this is so angry. And I recorded it on an iPad and I sent it off to the label. It was the last song that was written on the album. And they listened to it and they're like, this is great, but it's really mean. But like, listen, we're a pop punk album. We're a pop punk label. We write, you know, we listen to emo shit and stuff like that. Like, angry exes, this is our bread and butter, but this is too much. And I showed it to a few friends and they were like, listen, when you're handling personal topics and songs and stories and stuff like that regarding real life people, you got to remember that, again, these are real life people that you're portraying publicly to potentially hundreds of thousands of people. And so you need to be careful with what you do. You know, a friend of mine was telling me personal stories about how his exes did not like how they were portrayed in his music and how they lost real life friends over that kind of thing. And it had real fallout. And so it just kind of begs this question of responsibility versus artistic integrity. And so I kind of came to a compromise where I wanted to keep that raw, angry, spiteful energy and emotion behind it, but I completely fictionalized all the events, descriptors of the person, just kind of cranked them up to a cartoony extreme. So like the subject of the song doesn't do heroin. They don't do anything that I accuse them of in the song for, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's really just about trying to retain how I felt and expressing that. But also when you, you know, have a little bit of time to cool off and you're like, well, I it was kind of my fault too. So I went back and I also kind of added this almost self-deprecating, bitter sadness to the end too. Just kind of really tweaked it to not only be a little bit more respectful to the real life situation that was inspired by it, that inspired it, but also to kind of add a little bit of nuance to say, yeah, it's kind of sad. I fucked up too. You know, does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No, yeah. You're preaching to the choir, my friend.
Yep.
We have been there.
Yeah. You know, that's something that most people don't think about when they listen to music. I mean, for example, like the story so far, like you listen to Parker Cannon screaming about his ex-girlfriend for 3+ albums? Three albums. And most people like side with him, but you really don't think about the repercussions of the person that they're actually writing about. And then like the, like everybody who knows that person, you don't think that it would strain relationships or anything. So like, I commend you for actually like going back and rewriting and stuff to not put so much hate onto that specific person. Cause I feel like a lot of people wouldn't have the balls to do that. So
yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. Your art, you know, but for the betterment of someone else's life.
Oh, absolutely.
Even if it's someone you fucking hate.
Yeah.
You know?
I even wanted to drive that point home in the bridge. Isn't it sad this is the only song about you? We have Mount Hecla on the same album. So that's kind of just me affirming to myself and anybody listening who's kind of in on it, saying this is fiction. But also, you know, if you didn't know any of the context, it's still kind of a fun sing-along.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So I put way too much thought in, you know, presumably years, care.
Yeah.
You had quite a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is one of the, like I said, this is one of the newer ones. So a little bit less time, but this one still kind of came together nicely. And you know what? I think it still sounds really fun. You know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think there's a song on here where I was like, I'm bored, you know?
No,
I
not
think
at
everything
all.
Just had its own special charm to it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Did you play all the instruments on this, or did you have people come in and play?
So I did the synthesizers, and I did all of the ukulele, and some of what you might hear to be acoustic guitar was actually a baritone ukulele.
Okay.
And I also did banjo, but in terms of guitar and bass and drums, I have no clue how to play those. So essentially, I was sitting down with a session guitarist playing, okay, these are the chords, these are the root notes, but I want you to play it on a higher register here, or I want you to play a little lead guy that goes like, do, 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 do. You know, I was kind of almost coaching him on an instrument I don't know how to play. So everything in the album I wrote, and I had like an obsessive level of control over it, but I did not play everything.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, actually, it's really funny you said that, because when I was producing my record, I hired a producer that I met, a super talented guy, knew how to play like every instrument kind of guy. And I'm going to him and he's like, I know nothing about how to play drums. I barely know like what each part of the drum is called. And then so I would just go to him. I'm like, all right, this is what I want. I want you to go boom, damn, boom, cha cha or something like that, right? And he'd be like this, he'd do the same thing, and I was like, exactly, you know. And it's like such a redeeming feeling to like hear what you were hearing in your head on the instrument, kind of like with the artwork we were discussing.
Yeah,
you know, producers are something fucking special.
Oh yeah,
or studio musicians that just kind of know what you already want.
Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, we all sound like idiots when we're talking to drummers.
No, 100%. Yeah. The guy, well, you can just kind of tell they're annoyed by it because it's like only drummers can communicate with drummers properly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, thank God for them.
Yeah.
Someone's got to beat the fuck out of the drums for me.
Yeah, we need a drum translator over here.
What are some of the lyrics that stand out to you on this one? You going to go to the bridge again?
How'd you guess?
Like, I like the bridge on this one the most. I think the simplicity with it, it's just like, maybe it's just the repeating lines, like really, you know, powering in the effect of what the song's about. I think it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love this bridge. It's just it's really repetitive. So how do you make it repetitive without, you know, making it repetitive? How do you repeat the same thing but keep it interesting and not make people annoyed? Mm-hmm. And so as you're going, isn't it sad? This is the only song about you. I kind of add this little bit over top of it. I had my arms around your waist and your hands around my throat. Used to hope that you cared for yourself, but now you don't. Just to feel like my time spent with you was not a joke. Now you're gone from this world and I hope you never cope. It's just really, really venomous. Just, I hope you never cope, you know? Like you hear ex-girlfriend songs and stuff like that, but you never hear them say, I hope you're not okay. I hope you're suffering angry. Yeah, absolutely.
You're in that category now.
You know, so like I said, when you're dealing with emotions this harsh, you want to make sure it's fictionalized so it's not representative of how I feel anymore. Better yet,
you say that it's all fictional, but it's really 100% real.
He's just tricking
us. That would also be a really clever cover. I totally agree. It's just, I really like how those lyrics flow together.
Yeah.
Really well. It's really catchy. I really need to ensure that I had like a second vocal layer, like, as like years ago before I even came up with the song, that bridge existed long before the fuck song. I think I came up with that my sophomore year or something like that, before I even met the person who the song is about or was fiction. You get what I mean.
Yeah. See, we're on to something.
I feel like I'm talking to lawyers right now.
No, we're your therapist. Don't you remember? Yeah. You could tell us anything.
Okay, now you sound like a cop. You know, I just really need something really catchy and really fun. And I think those lyrics in particular really captured it. But also, I really like the ending where I just echo, isn't it sad? Isn't it sad? Where you had this grand and anthemic and really spiteful and kind of mischievous, isn't it sad? This is the only song about you. Fuck you. But at the end, it just kind of really tones down and it's kind of self-deprecating and self-pitying. Isn't it sad? Isn't it sad? You know, it kind of comes down a little bit and just totally retextures that lyric. So I'm really happy with how that turned out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that was, I mean, I don't know. All the songs you picked, I was really happy with.
Yeah.
So, a lot of these stood out to me from the first listen. Let's jump in the next track though. We got the title track, Denton Weaver.
When everything ends the same, at least I'll be glad you came. I'm sorry for all the promises I broke after you died.
We gotta know about the story on this one.
I don't know. Just words I put together that sounded cool. I was at Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl 2018, I believe. I was on my grandma's couch playing on my ukulele, and I just barred a chord and I played this, and I was like, "Whoa, do I just wound up playing the riff on my ukulele. I'm like, this is the coolest goddamn thing I've ever put together with my hands. So I immediately throw down my phone. I play it. You can hear like Super Bowl commercials in the background. And I think this is maybe my favorite song on the album. I love this song. I think just in terms of if I was not the person writing and singing and playing, this would probably be my favorite on the record if I was the listener. This song is so jam-packed, full of ideas and feelings, and it's just like a sensory overload. It's fast, it's aggressive, it's all over the place, but it also is really pretty in certain areas.
Yeah.
The bridge and the build and that kind of thing, I think, is just super exciting and gorgeous at times. It's just kind of like a microcosm of the entire album and what I wanted to pull off with it. And I think even just listening to the instrumentals as they were being recorded in the studio, I was just getting goosebumps. And I knew this would probably be one of my favorites. You know,
I agree with you.
I love that feeling when you hear what you created and it's just like, you feel like it's just like your body, like telling you that, hey, you did a good fucking job.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you wanted to hear all along.
Good job. Here's some dopamine.
Yeah, take that shit while you can.
Take it before I forget how to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting that you said that from a listener's perspective, that this would be like your favorite song off this whole album, because this is my favorite song off this whole album. I think instrumentally it just works so well, and there's some sweet like guitar riffs in the intro and then in between the verses. And I was just wondering, did you come up with those like little guitar licks, or was it off the top of your head or off the top of your studio musician? How did that work out for you?
Basically, we just played out through, you know, when you're recording, you start off with bass, then you do rhythm guitar, then you do lead. And up until that point, I'd never added any leads to the intro, but I just want to try something.
Yeah.
And so I had this melody in my head for the past few months, and I was like, okay, what if you play this? Do, 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 do. And it turns out that's really hard to play on guitar. My lead guitarist live complains about it every time we play. He's like, this sucks. Look like his fingers are like doing acrobatics. Like, look what I have to do. And he's just all scrunched up. He did it with difficulty at first, but then eventually he was able to get it. And it sounded awesome. And I was like, holy shit. All right. This turned out okay. We're keeping that. So it was just kind of like a little spur of the moment thing on my end. But I do want to shout out to Andy Altadonna, who just pulled it off flawlessly. He's incredible.
Yeah. Gotta love when that happens.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh yeah.
So I know this question's asked a lot, but lyrically, what stands out to you?
Any guess?
Bet it's in that bridge.
Yeah, but it is.
It's, you know, those lyrics don't really mean anything specific. I just, to me, break your bones, break your phone, let it gush and flow, bleed and flow. It's not uplifting, especially. No. Normally, especially for the end of the song too, and the beginning of your record, you know, normally I have artists going, "Oh, it's going to be okay. You do treat yourself well," and I'm just like, "Fuck it, do it. You want to do it? Do it. You know that bad thing you want to do? Fuck it. I can't stop you. Go for it." I guess. It's just kind of, for me, it just feels really raw in the sense that that's just not something that a lot of artists tell their listeners. And it's not something I agree with per se. I guess it made sense for me in the moment. I'm just not there right now. I wouldn't write a song like that again. I wouldn't write those lyrics. But I guess it just kind of comes down to this angst and frustration I had when I was in freshman year trying to talk people down. And eventually I just came to this realization that I can't stop you. And it kind of just comes down to a lot of these core existential questions of like, well, why shouldn't you do these horrible things? Why shouldn't you break your bones on purpose? Why shouldn't you smash your phone against a wall? What's wrong with bleeding, you know, at the end of the day? And so that was just kind of my mindset when I was 14, 15, 16. I was an edgy prick. Okay. I am a little disturbed by how pretty those lines sound. When you listen to it, you're like, oh, that's real sweet. And then you're like, maybe not, you know. It's just really raw, and it's this very uncomfortable and honestly kind of icky sentiment that I kind of used to have, being just frustrated with people who just needed my help. And, you know, it's just icky, but it's raw.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's kind of why it sticks out to me a little bit. Also, it's just really fun to sing live.
There you go.
Yeah.
The audience picks up on it real fast and the whole room just fills up. It's really cool.
How many live shows have you played today?
If
you had to guess.
With our current lineup, I'd say maybe like 5 or 6 or 7. Okay. Not a lot. Our live shows are pretty elaborate and they take a lot of preparation. They're kind of a mess. We're taking a little hiatus right now live, but when they do happen, they're a blast.
Do you have any plans to go farther out than surrounding states of Idaho?
We'd love to. It's just the way that our, you know, I could just ramble about like technicalities and stuff like that. Right now, we still have a few more kinks we need to work out in terms of how we play live, how we have a clicking track, backing track, how we play along to synthesizers that are pre-recorded. You know, just trying to find some stability for live members. You know, we had 2 people leave in the past month for various reasons. None of which mine, by the way. That's a first.
There you go.
you know, so it's just humans, working with humans is very volatile and difficult.
Absolutely.
I think
you get a lot of differing opinions and certain people don't work well with other people. So
plus they all have their own lives.
So, yep. They all have their own lives and schedules.
Got their own issues to take care of before doing something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
21 Pilots run to something. You have a drummer, you have a singer, you have a MacBook.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're good. You're set. So not only are you making more money, you have more control over the show. You have fewer schedules to work around. But also the likelihood of like your guitar player turning out to be a baby murderer.
Well,
a lot lower.
True story or?
No, that's just an example.
I was going to say, I was like, man, how do we dive into that one?
How do we get some cats? Yeah. The baby murderer.
Lots of murders in the story of Nate.
Man, you'd think I'd have more story time on my YouTube channel, huh?
I wait every day. I look at your channel, Nate.
No, me too.
All right, let's jump into the last track. We got Funeral Song. This one's a little special, so I want you to really dive into the story on this one.
All right. So when I was 15 years old, basically I had this weird savior complex where I just really tried to talk people down when they were having a bad time. Because when you're 15, 16 years old, you're just a big bundle of stupid emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And every heartbreak and microaggression is like the end of the world when you're in high school. And for some people, that's just devastating. And I had one person in specific who I felt I could take under my wing and try to, I'll fix you. which is not a very good sentiment to have when you're a child. Very immature, very misguided, and also kind of dangerous, turns out. She was, she had some serious mental illness problems, just very suicidal tendencies. She was all over the place. And I kind of just tried to make her my responsibility. Not a good idea in retrospect. I was very vastly underqualified. And so one night she called me. It was like 1 a.m. And I looked at the phone and I was like, I'll take my chances. And I put the phone back down.
Oh, no.
And the next day she's not in school. And I'm like, what the fuck? She's not answering texts. There's something weird going on. I'm being pulled aside by the teacher. What the fuck is going on? So it turns out she attempted suicide that night.
Oh, no.
She didn't succeed. She's still alive. She's kicking ass today. She's doing great.
That's the happiest part of this interview so
yes.
far.
Yes. She's doing great. I need to preface that right now. She's doing well.
That's awesome.
She's very talented, amazing, excellent artist. But she, you know, I saw her suicide note and like she thanked me at the end of it. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, what a weird sting. Like, yeah. It's like a. I'm glad I could be there for you, but also like, oh, you know, it's such negative emotions behind it.
Yeah.
It's just all over the place. And so that song is kind of a hypothetical of what if she did? What if she succeeded? And so that song, a lot of the descriptions, especially during the bridge, are actual things that happened. I remember a very specific day when we were hanging out in a barn on our family's giant property. And we were just hanging out on this metal swing hanging from the ceiling and we're kicking dirt and I had a big crush on her. Or us going to like the fairgrounds and that kind of thing. And, you know, just me telling her to calm down and all this jazz. That's probably the most literal song on the album in terms of realism. And so essentially it's thankfully a hypothetical, it's fiction, but, a lot of the emotions are old and they are still a little icky and raw. And so I remember getting very emotional doing vocals for this in the studio and telling the producer about the whole thing. And, it sounds cool, I think.
Yeah.
That guitar lick is one of the catchiest goddamn things I think I've ever come up with. when we were recording in studio, one of the first times we recorded, we were doing demos and stuff. Pardon me. Basically, we had this big chunk of the song. It's just chords. And I told my friend Jordan Thornquist, I was like, I love Jordan Thornquist.
Yeah, no, you were the one. I listened to his music because of you. He was in one of your videos a long time ago.
Oh, you're going to like this.
Oh, shit.
I told Jordan, I said, listen, man, I need a solo in here. I don't have anything. Would you like to try and write a solo on the spot? And he was like, fuck, that's a big request. So we just picked up a guitar and he went into the studio and he just had me record, take. And he's trying. He'd fuck up. He's like, fuck. And he'd stop. And we did this over and over for like 40, 50 minutes, just trying to get this one segment down. And he was getting so frustrated. I've never seen him so frustrated before. Eventually we just had to take a break and he just simmered and he steamed, you know, I could have sworn I saw steam coming off the top of his head. He was just angry and frustrated with this whole bit, and I kind of felt bad because I just dropped this on him. And after just a little bit, without looking at anybody, he was just, I'm going to try again. And he stood up and he went back into the studio and he just started ripping away on his guitar. He's just killing it. In fact, I even recorded a video of all of the people in the studio just kind of silently huddled around the window watching him go. And I think the caption was Jordan scaring us. it just came out of nowhere and he nailed it in like two takes, completely improvising. And so what you hear on the album itself was the final take that he got. I insisted that, you know, we have all this big equipment. We have this world-class guitarist, but I really want Jordan solo as it is on the final record. So we had to make sure that everything would fit together. It was kind of just juggling a lot of pieces in the song so that this one solo bit would fit. And that wound up being the big grand finale of the album. So that was Jordan Thornquist.
That's phenomenal.
Man, a little bit of a full circle moment for me. Yeah. Also, it's so funny. I'm going to read you what the next question was supposed to be. The song has some incredible lead guitar in the intro and a massive solo towards the end. What does it take to add a strong lead to a song? And you basically answered it without us even asking.
Spread our minds. I can ask
Jordan Thornquist. I don't know.
The answer, Jordan Thornquist. Hire him.
Yeah, hire him. He deserves money.
Do you have any fun facts about writing Funeral Song? I think that guitar solo might have been
That was probably the most fun one.
Yeah.
I do. That song was originally 6 minutes long.
Oh, really?
Okay. Basically, a really bad habit I have is I like to loop and repeat segments of the song, and I like to add really long choruses. Originally, the song had a chorus. Because all my family means nothing to it, you know, it just kind of rambled on and on and on. And I sent off to the label and they're listening to it and they're like, this kind of sucks. I mean, they didn't say that, but that's kind of what they meant. They're like, this is dragging on way too long. We have to wait too long to get to the good part of the song. And this chorus just isn't cut. What if we just removed it? What if the song was just verses and the outro? And I was like, no, this is sacrilegious. This is blasphemy. I will never allow this.
Every song has a chorus.
Before I let you do this. Turns out they were right and it's awesome.
Sometimes it's like, it's really hard to separate yourself from an idea you have that you think is like so good.
Oh, yeah.
And then once you just like listen to somebody and actually try it, it's like, okay, shit, this is better. Yeah.
And there's a lot of little bits throughout the album that it could have been like 40 seconds longer, but thank God the label stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear a lot of smaller artists do that where it's really indulgent and you got to ask, are you playing the song for you or are you playing the song for me? And so they helped me really focus up on the listener. You know, what is the listener feeling right now? They're checking their watch right now, going, when is it going to wrap up this element so we can get to the next thing? This song originally had a really shitty chorus, but we removed it. So now it's just kind of like a ladder leading up to this one big, massive climax for the entire album. So could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you guys play this one live?
Yes.
All right.
This one makes people fucking cry. My lead guitar player has the entire thing memorized and he can replicate it almost one for one perfectly. And he kills it. During this song, everybody except for me has like wireless receivers and pickups and stuff like that. So they just walk through the audience as they play this. And I'm just stuck by myself on stage. You know, and so it's when you're playing live, you got to keep a lot of dynamics in mind. You know, you don't want to just have everybody, the focus is right here the entire time. So we like to shake things up. So have people dip down into the audience. So you have these cool dynamics at play where things are changing up and you're not losing people's interest. It's something new. Oh my God. Pop punk bands take notice. and yeah, this song is so much fun live. And I have it rigged up a little bit. I like to play with things live. Because if you're listening to a song at home, you know, and you go see it live, what are you paying money for? You just paying money for like a big jukebox, essentially, to hear all your favorite songs regurgitate back on you? Or do you want to hear and see and experience, you know, something artistic and new, you know? And so I really like to muddle and fuck with the mixes and stuff like that. So specifically during the bridge for Funeral Song, I programmed this giant sub bass that just shakes the room to the root notes as the song starts to build, and it's huge, it's massive. It's like if you have posters on the walls, they shake. It is incredible. So it's that's probably our favorite to play. No, second favorite. Denton Weaver's awesome. Yeah, Funeral's wonderful to play live. That's the one. If you're like a 14-year-old kid, you're gonna cry to this one. It's it kills it.
Absolutely. Nice. So this is the ending of the album. What made you decide to end it on a funeral?
Where else would you end it? Like, this song just had album closer written all over it.
Oh yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Before I had like all the songs written, this was one of the first songs that was written. I'm like, this is how the album's gonna end. You know, if I write something better, God damn it, I'll save it. But this song needs to wrap things up. And I guess if anyone listens to the album, I hopefully they'd agree. I heard someone say that Denton Weaver should end the record. And I was like, no, listen to Funeral. Are you kidding me? Where else does Funeral go? It just makes thematic sense. It makes textural song sense. You know, it just sounds climactic, important, and a good note to end on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now, you know, I feel like I asked a dumb question. You know?
Well, it was, I've been asked dumber questions.
Do you want to redeem yourself?
Feel bad.
No, I
like breaking down why.
No, absolutely. All right, asshole. I mean, Nate.
Not the first time I've been called that. You're good.
Any final thoughts on the Denton Weaver? I have another question. Will there be a sequel?
Okay. Final thoughts on the Denton Weaver. It took forever. I guess it's most fun to look at it as a scrapbook. And I'm not done with this concept yet. There's a lot of material, not musical material, but multimedia material that I still want to share with the characters, with the story. And that's going to be revealed as soon as I make the stuff to share.
That's awesome. Another 8 years or so.
No. Yeah, another 8 years or so. And I think, you know, I'm really proud of it. I'm very happy with how it turned out. And if I had a time machine and I went back and I was like, 14-year-old Nate, this is yours, I would probably think it's the coolest goddamn album ever written. You know, it's just kind of a gift to baby me. You know,
that's
just the album I would have loved. Will there be a sequel? We have Easter eggs throughout the entire, all the artwork. There, we have little hints. I already know what the next album's going to be, what the concept is, what it's about, and how it ties into this world without being so, you know, obtrusive and annoying that it gets in the way of music. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we do have concepts, even on the front cover of the album. I have a pretty prominent freaking Easter egg. Anyone who can find it, have a grand old time. Gosh darn it. Yeah, there will be a sequel. I don't want to share too many details. I just want to say it's a summer camp for monsters.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How far are you in the process?
I have most of it written, and I have the concept taken care of. I'm entering into the demo phase.
Okay.
Right. Nice. Now. And I don't want to get too excited, but even the worst song on this album would be up there with all the other songs. I think I got it. I think I know what I'm doing now. Everything that has been written so far is super exciting. I'm all very proud of album number two so far.
That's the sophomore slump. So
yeah,
it's your time to shine.
I don't think this will be a sophomore slump. I'm very excited for this one.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely. So it'll be a little bit more folksy, a little bit more poppy, a little bit more Broadway. A little bit less My Chemical Romance, but, you know, we're doing a little Pretty Odd mix-up.
Unsubscribe.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
No, I'm excited. No. This record was such a treat for us. Yes. It kind of came out of nowhere. I actually heard of the band because I think you plugged it on your channel a while ago, and it just happened to reappear in our lives. So, super happy that we can make this work, and I had such a fun time talking with you, but before we let you go, you got to promote whatever's on the horizon. What's coming up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me some merch.
Yeah. So my friend has a band called Saint Terrible. They have an incredible music video called An Endless Fiction. And I think if anyone has any self-respect, they should take some time out of their day and watch that. And my friend Scooter has a really cool band called the Joy Runners. That's really cool. And they're spectacular as well. Oh yeah, I also have a band called Raccoon Tour. We're
fine. Oh shit.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
A Google search will bring you where you need to go.
What if I want to buy your record on vinyl? Where can I buy it?
Yeah.
A Google search will take you where you need to go.
I will use Bean actually.
Oh frick. Well, are you okay?
No, I mean life's been
hard. Talking about like 2014. You know, 2014 people and stuff like that, but Bing's a little 2011, if we're it's being back honest. There.
Bing it on, you know?
Sorry, that was terrible.
I really like making jokes about Bing. I can't help it.
Did you say Bean?
Yeah,
Bing it on?
Bing.
Bing. Is that like a masturbation saying, reference or something?
He's beaning it on now. Over here.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, this is a family show.
That's what you thought.
Yeah, records are available in the I Surrender merch store.
Excellent.
Anyone's interested.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. I want it for the music and the art. I think it's a great collaboration. So,
yeah, well, first few people who buy the record also get a booklet of lore. We're going to be including a zine with the first few records that are written by the characters in the universe. So it's like, you know, covers the news in that area. It has a map of Converse County and stuff like that.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's really cool. So how many copies of that are available before you guys run out?
Right now, we were limiting it to the first 200, but we're running pretty super duper close to that. So I might extend it. Who knows? If I show it to the label and they're like, this is awesome, we might include it with every single one. Nice. But I don't want to make people too comfy. You know, I'd say if you're interested in learning more about this world, definitely go out and pick it up pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Nate, it was a pleasure. Let's go ahead and play us out.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. You guys have been great. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.
What a great, interview.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you just listened to like 45, 50 minutes worth of an interview and then you're now here. So, but for us, that was a second.
Yeah.
But I had such a fun time talking to Nate.
Oh yeah.
He's such super kind, cool dude. Very self-deprecating in the beginning.
Oh yeah.
It was a very scary moment. We were like, oh no.
You know, we should be used to it because our friends.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, we're a little self-deprecating at times too.
Yeah.
But that came out of the gate swinging.
That was like, I was not expecting that. But I know being around our friends, like, I'm like, okay, I can dish it back to them.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah.
Had such a fun time. But anyway, how do you feel about jumping into our up-and-coming band of the week?
Let's do it.
Are any of you listeners in a small and up-and-coming band? If that's the case, we would love to hear from you. If you want to be a part of the show, we have a nifty Google form you can fill out to give us all the info we need to get your song submitted. You can find a link to the form in our link tree and on any and all of our social medias. Now, this week, we have a band that's harder to pronounce. I believe it is Toshiro with their song Exit.
You know, I think you pronounced that correctly.
Did I get that one?
Yeah.
Hopefully. Toshiro is a Western PA emo math rock pop punk slash whatever band consisting of a fat dude, Jacob Campbell, who hired some amazing drummer, Daniel J. Gallardo, because friendship is a flimsy basis for being productive and creative. Interesting concept there.
Yeah.
This music has languished on my heart and shoddy records for 6 or so years.
Wow.
It is really time to share them with the world, and it comes with both apprehension and relief. I hope you like it. Thank you for listening. That was very polite.
Yeah.
Story behind the song. My journey through music has consisted of many moments in which I saw a light at the end of the tunnel followed by a crushing defeat. The song highlights the moments leading up to disappointment.
It's a nice little interesting topic for a song.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited. You ready? Let's fucking jam out.
Let's jam. Yes, there is an exit. I can see the light that's crawling out from underneath the largest apparatus. Whatever's on the other side. We'll keep fighting on for so long. And though I won't admit it, I loved every moment in spite of all the hurt and heartache. We went through part of this. It's over.
Buddy,
I loved it.
It was definitely a different type of genre compared to usual.
Yeah,
this definitely hits the math rock.
Oh yeah,
gives me some Jeff Rosenstock vibes.
Yeah,
a lot of emotional. He did this grunt thing. I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, it overall, like, if you're not into this, you should be.
I get it though.
I think it's like,
took me a while.
Yeah, I think it's just like so unorthodox for people sometimes to get into music like this. Yeah, but. Honestly, I think it's really good, and I can't wait to see, like, or hear more from them.
Mm-hmm.
So
they have a very low count on Spotify, so...
Well, let's boost those fucking numbers up, dude.
Yeah, that is the attitude that I want right then and there.
They're up-and-comers for a reason, because they're coming up.
Up, and here.
Oh, whoa.
Okay.
Awesome job, Toshiro. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you for sending this to us. Like, it's a nice, pleasant surprise and a change of pace for us. Normally, we get like the
normal pop punk.
Pop punk, but it's nice to throw in a wrench every once in a while and listen to a little Leedles and some math rock. You know.
So, guys, check out Toshiro. That is spelled T O C H I R O with their song "Exit," which is spelled E X I T.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right. If you guys want to reach out to us at any point in your life, like I said last week, don't hit us up on our personal accounts.
Mm-mm.
I won't answer. I'll probably answer. But
I'd be like, who are you?
What do you really want? You should hit us up at PPES Podcast. You know, that is PPES. I don't know what I'm looking at. PPES Podcast. Also, start answering our questions.
Yeah.
Please?
Pretty please.
Pretty
we'll do
please?
Anything. We're really lonely.
I put in a lot of work to make that graphic.
What, like 15 minutes?
I think it was a like record yesterday. It was like a whole minute.
A whole minute.
Yeah,
oh,
dude.
Wow. Yeah, that's more work than
Thank
God we got set up well.
I even ordered food, and I'm like, I'm going to be working on this for a while. Had it done, I'm like, well, fuck, what am I going to do now?
Just eat.
Yep. So,
Hope you guys enjoyed the interview.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun with Nate. Also, the music's great. Like,
hell yeah.
I don't know if we said that yet, but the music is fantastic, and it's something different.
I think that was the first thing that I was drawn to when they emailed us. I instantly went to Raccoon Tour and listened to the beginning of the record, and like, the production value is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, they're great. The record company they go through, or he goes through, is super adamant about releasing quality stuff. And
yeah.
I mean, most record labels are like that, but I really feel like they went the extra mile with Nate to make sure that they release
His is a very visual album anyways.
Yeah, it is.
With
and the artwork. We talked about artwork, that. Yeah. Wow, so good.
Yeah, it's a very imagery heavy album anyways. So I think for however long it actually took him to put out the record, I think they waited the perfect amount of time to do that. So that way they could present his album the best that they could. And that's a huge shout out to I Surrender Records.
That's who they were. Yeah.
Yep.
So if you guys want to get on the bandwagon, something that is probably going to be pretty big one day.
Yes.
Raccoon Tour. Look them up on Spotify. Look them up on Apple Music. Look them up on Deezer. I feel like there's got to be at least one. It's a streaming service.
I think everything's on Deezer now.
Yeah, pretty much. So
except for the Rolling Stones.
And that's fine.
Yeah, they can stay dead.
Okay. Controversial. We're going to leave you with that. Thanks so much for listening. Please communicate with us and love us.
Yes.